July 16th through the 18th, I'm going to be at New York Comedy Club in Stamford, and then Montreal, just for laughs. I'm going to be there July 25th at Club Soda, doing an hour. So it's going to be, you know, mostly the Netflix hour. If you didn't hear it, I didn't go to Montreal on the tour, plus some new jokes. But then after that, it's all me working on new stuff. So I will see you in Albany, July 31st and 1st at the Albany Funny Bone. Just go to danceoder.com. What am I doing? Just go to danceoder.com. After Albany, go to danceoder.com. It's all there. We all put it up. But I'm on the road working on a new hour. So come check it out. I hope you like it. There's going to be some real humdingers on there. There's going to be some real shitty ones too. So just come see it. Come watch it get birthed. Watch me push them out. On the road. But thank you for watching the podcast. I think in the history, when they do the Ken Burns documentary of podcasting, and they zoom into the, you know, where he's like in the early 2000s, an established thing. One of the things that they'll talk to us about, like the Civil War vets, will be like the regret.
Yeah.
There's just like a slow song playing, being like, did you? You're like, I regretted everything I said. But you're, I'm excited to see the special.
The what?
The special.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well-rounded entertainer. Yeah, I love an idea of an animated special.
Yeah, thanks. I think it turned out. I don't know if Pam sent you the link. But
no, they didn't. Okay. But cool. I'm excited to watch it. Yeah. And I will watch it because it comes out today.
We had to push the release.
Well, you know what? This isn't coming out for a while, so June 18th. Out.
Yeah, yeah.
We just start recording.
Yeah, okay, cool.
I'm here with Dan Mintz. I'm doing a better job of introducing people. Because I just jump into a conversation, and then the listeners go like, hey, who the fuck are you talking to?
I was wondering,
but I don't, I'm not good at proper intros, because then it feels like a school project.
Mm-hmm.
When you go, I am Dan, and this is, I'm excited to get you on the show, dude. I've been a fan of yours for years. Your stand-up back in the day, like mid-2000s, the group that you would run with were like you, Mulaney, Jeselnik, there was like so many awesome comedians, and I was like at the Creek in the Cave coming up or whatever, but you guys were like some of my favorite to watch because of how good. I mean, you've worked on some fucking awesome shows. You're the voice of Tina Belcher. You've had a hell of a career, so it's fun now. Do you like that you're like kind of going back out on your own and being like, hey, I'm going to do my, because your last stand-up was mid-2000s, right?
I released an album, and it was in 2014.
It's a great album.
Oh, thank you.
By the way, go check it out. You can go download it. It's just an album. There isn't like a special along with it. It's on Spotify.
Yeah.
It's fucking hilarious.
Thank you.
You're a fantastic joke writer. And that's what I think like is missing, especially now in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like one of those albums that's just hardcore jokes and not like a thing, you know?
I mean, I'm glad when the style turns away from what I do, because then you less worry about new competition.
Yeah, but absolutely. When did you feel like that happened? Like when the style turned away from just straight up set up punch?
You know, I'm so out of the loop.
Sure.
It was almost like other people, what they would say to me, they would say, oh, it's so rare that someone does one-liners, which I don't think people used to say.
No.
And then I realized, that's kind of how I realized. But yeah, it takes so long to write. There's a reason why it's like 10 years to release my album and then 10 years to do a special.
Well, one-liners aren't like, I'm more of a kind of like a story or personal comic. Mm-hmm. And I think that's easier because really you're just like taking what happened and making it funny versus like constructing a one-line joke is, people don't understand. It's like meticulous. It's like a ship in a bottle.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of just waiting until you think of an idea, and then you're like, oh, now I have nothing until my next one. And you know, with like stories and narratives, you can build off of what you wrote
for sure.
I will say, I think everything seems easy if you know how to do it, and hard if you don't. And like, I've tried telling stories on stage before, and I just realized I tell stories like a regular person,
really,
like not like it doesn't sound like a comedian.
And that happens.
I was like, where, you know, regular person's funny story is the funny things at the end, and it's all build up, and like no one wants to sit through your 5-minute build up. So I'm like, and I'm like, you know, because when I started doing long, you know, headlining sets, I wanted to fill the time.
Sure.
But it's just a skill. Like I have to start over and learn how to do that. And I just,
how fucking hard is it to do 60 of one-liners? That seems like it's got to be like, you have to like, you know, I think all of us have note cards or some sort of way to know what our set is. But I feel like on a one-liner comic, you would have to have like 40 or 50 bullet points.
Yeah. I mean, I have, it is hard to remember. If I really, if I'm doing the same set for a while, I'll remember, but whenever I'm changing stuff, it's like, it's not worth trying to remember all this. So I'll have my note cards, but yeah, it's, you know, it's like 3 to 4 jokes a minute. So
that's so much. Like, I have bits that go like, I have a joke that goes 7 minutes. Wow. And then you hear that and you're like, I don't know. Like, I think, it's given me anxiety because I would be like, oh, fuck, I need 5 other ones to get just to 15 minutes. Were you always interested in one-liner styles, like growing up? Was that your favorite kind, or did you find like you just did that the best?
I just found I did it the best.
Yeah.
You know, when I started, I just did everything, and I don't even remember what happened, but after like a year or two, I was only doing one-liners.
So you weren't like growing up being like, oh, I want to be, you like watch like someone that does a one-liner and you're like, that's my style. You like kind of found it yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't. I so hardly watched stand-up growing up.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure I've seen one-liner comics, but
sure,
I probably didn't even think about the different styles until after I was doing it. I mean, the one thing I guess that I was like my favorite thing as a kid that would be my biggest influence was like Deep Thoughts on SNL.
Oh yeah. Jack Handy was.
Yeah. Which was amazing.
Which is, those were always how you could tell who the smarter kids were, because like the dumb loud kids like me, we liked Matt Foley and we liked Attack of the Masturbating Zombies or Head Wound Harry.
You must be the same age as me because Matt Foley was like
that's
the
what it was. But that was like the litmus test.
Yeah.
We're the loud kid in school. And really, I liked Matt Foley, but I was more of like, I was really big into Dana Carvey. So I liked the voices.
Yeah.
I liked the impressions.
Yeah.
But really, SNL at that time, you could gauge who was who.
Yeah.
Because the people that liked Matt Foley, you're like, oh, Monster Trucks, you know, Slim Jims and Mountain Dew are Mountain Foley. And then like Deep Thoughts with Jack Handy, you drink tea and you're only at 13 years old? That's like those people who are like, I could go for a nice chamomile right now. It seemed like the more intelligent.
Yeah.
But you grew up in Alaska.
Yeah.
That's... In Anchorage,
Alaska.
From 1 to 18?
Yeah, I mean, 0 to 18.
Yeah, really, 0. But, I don't know if they moved you in. They go, well, only at 1. 0 to 1 was a laboratory. But growing up there, I lived in Kenai for a summer in Soldotna.
I knew that, yeah.
I did a cannery.
Oh, cool.
Just like my aunt lived up there.
Yeah.
She worked at a hospital in Kenai.
Yeah.
So I went up there and like lived up there, and it's a different place.
Yeah. I mean, Anchorage is definitely different from Kenai.
Sure. Anchorage is the big city.
Yeah.
We went there on like our off weekend, and then it was like, oh, this isn't a big city.
Yeah.
Like, go, you go. I mean, I'm from Denver, and it was like, I went to Anchorage. I was like, this is a tiny city.
Yeah.
But it is the big city in Alaska.
It is a normal life in terms of going to you're not hunting for your food.
Yeah, people don't realize that. But even though it is a normal life, you still have the winter darkness and the summer light.
Yeah.
Was that a weird thing for you to adjust off of when you left, when you came to the lower 48?
You know, I don't remember thinking about it much until, you know, when I moved out to California and I went camping the first time, which I always loved.
Sure.
I was like, oh, it gets dark at like 7 p.m. What am I supposed to do till I get tired at like 2 a.m.? And like, it didn't, just took for granted in Alaska, it's light, I mean, it's twilight at least, like all night, and you can just at any hour do anything.
It really is, it's startling when you first go there, because I was there like May to August. So it was the sunlight thing. The first night I was there, I was drinking at my aunt's friend's house because I was 19 and we were drinking. And my aunt's friend, we were in the backyard smoking a cigarette. And he's like, what time do you think it is? And I was like, 9:30. And I was being like liberal about like, I know we're up north and it sets late. So 9:30. And he's like, it's 2 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And I had to sit down. Like, it fucked me up so bad that I was no, it's not. What do you mean? And I looked at, I was like, I don't think everybody had a cell phone back then. So I like went and looked at the clock. I was like, oh, damn, it is. And then it's just like a weird thing of when you go into the winters, I'm sure it's like there's an adjustment period. But after I left Alaska that summer and I moved back, the first time I had a night that was dark, it fucked me up. It made me like fall asleep very fast. Did you have any kind of change when you moved to California besides just that camping trip?
Well, I mean, I didn't move right to California. Okay. It was, you know, after college. And I guess college also starts in the fall. So it's a good time to adjust. But
oh, yeah. And you went to Harvard. So you go immediately to Alaska to Massachusetts.
Yeah.
So that's got to be a...
I mean, if anything, it was almost felt colder because I had to walk everywhere and Anchorage just drive everywhere. And I, for some reason, I should have known better, but the only time I'd ever been down to the contiguous lower 48.
I love that. By the way, I was trying to root it out.
Yeah.
Alaskans call us the lower 48.
Yeah.
That's how they refer to us, or the South.
Yeah.
Like my boss at the cannery is like, well, you're from the South. And I was like, I'm from Colorado. And he's like, no, you're not. But yeah, the lower 48 is great. So when you were moving to the lower 48.
Yeah. I mean, we visit all the time. We have family down here. Okay. You know, my parents, we don't have deep roots in Alaska or anything.
Sure.
And every time I'd been down here, it was either the summer or if it was the winter, it was like Florida or California. So I just didn't even realize there was like winter down here. And I think I like only brought like shorts and stuff to Boston. I was like, oh no, this is just as bad.
That's really funny that you just think, well, it's Southern. So it's gotta be warm. Exactly. What is it, near the equator? No, it's very far away. What made your family move to Alaska? Cause you said you don't have deep roots there. What put your family up there?
I mean, my dad grew up in Burbank.
Okay.
My mom grew up in Boston, and they met when they were in college and they stayed together and through my dad going to law school. And he just found a job. He's only going to go up for 1 year.
Yeah.
This was, you know, a few years before I was born. And it was doing environmental law.
Oh, cool.
Like a 1 year fellowship.
Yeah.
And they just liked it so much. They stayed and then they're still there. I don't think they're going to retire anywhere else.
Are you a big nature family? Like, do you guys go? Because you have Denali, you have like, you know, like incredible parks there.
Yeah, I mean, we're from Alaska, but we're also Jewish. So it's kind of like by Alaska standards. Yeah, not really,
we go there for the fish, but I don't really enjoy much other things. I don't like the environment. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, I've never thought about what a perfect recipe to make a comedian is take a Jewish family and raise them in the wilderness. You're like Northern exposure of comedy. Where you're like, I can't fucking act. Yeah. Which, by the way, was the character in Northern Exposure, was he a Jewish doctor?
Yes.
Yes. So that makes so much more. Yeah. You live Northern Exposure.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they took the idea for my sitcom like well before I.
Yeah. You go, I lived it and you went back in time and did it.
Yeah.
But did you ever watch that when you were a kid?
Yeah. I watched it every week. I don't remember much about it. But.
Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, it was a sitcom in the 90s where a doctor moves to Alaska and has to kind of deal with the things of Alaska. But obviously they like, you know, make everything way Alaska. Because that's the funny part about Alaska is that people think you're just like living out of a shack on the side of a mountain. And you're like, no, there's like a McDonald's and stuff.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that blew my mind about Alaska. And as a kid, I'm interested to see what it was like for you growing up there. Summer is here. Time to sweat. Or go swimming. It's like a thing you should take a lot more advantage of as an adult. I'm trying to. I'm calling up Jay all the time and being like, please, can I come over and cannonball into your pool? And I'll wear some fresh ass Mac Weldons. Mac Weldons are bathing suits that just fit great. You can show a lot of thigh. You don't have to show a lot of thigh at all. I have these 49er ones that I love. They are a little thigh heavy, but because I love them so much, I'm like, you know what? Let everyone see the yams. But what I love about Mack Weldon bathing suits is they dry quick. They're super comfortable to lounge around in all day. They got that four-way stretch, so there's no bunching or sagging. You know, when you come out of the water and you're like, can everyone see my tiny swim wiener? Well, with Mack Weldon, you get out and you're like, oh, they just bunch up in the right places. It just feels dry. It's just like one of those good bathing suits to hang out in all day at the pool. So don't sweat the heat this summer. Feel effortlessly cool as you look with Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com. Get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with the promo code DAN. 20% that's pretty big. So go to MackWeldon.com. Get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code DAN. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code DAN. I just turned 43, which does hurt to say out loud for the first time. I don't know why. You know, if you know me, 42, number one favorite number. So hell yeah, what a year. And now it's over. And 43 following, it's just like, man, stuff's going to hurt more this year. I just know it. But thanks to ZocDoc, if I have any of those aging problems, I can just go find a doctor. ZocDoc.com is an app where you can find a doctor in-network in your area and get an appointment pretty damn quick, which is always the great thing when you're like, oh, because the hardest part about finding a doctor is, where the hell do I start? I don't know. I don't know doctors. I think I know a doctor. But honestly, I bet you could check him up and you'd be like, dude, he's a masseuse. And I'd be like, oh, man, he's not a real doctor. But if you want a real doctor, use ZocDoc. It's a free app and website, and it helps you find and book a high-quality in-network doctor so you can find someone you love that's right for what you need them for. We're talking about booking with more than 150,000 providers across all 50 states. And appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within a day to three. They want me to say 24 to 72 hours, but I'm talking, you know, regular people language. It's like you can find an appointment in the next couple of days. You can even score same-day appointments, which is pretty sweet. So stop putting off those doctor appointments. Go to ZocDoc.com/Soder to find and instantly book a doctor you love today. That's ZocDoc.com/Soder. ZocDoc.com/Soder. Thanks, ZocDoc, for sponsoring this message. That's one of the things that blew my mind about Alaska. And as a kid, I'm interested to see what it was like for you growing up there. Stuff like McDonald's is very expensive because of how they ship all the stuff there.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to go to McDonald's, it's almost like a nice night out.
Well, maybe, I mean, in Anchorage, yeah, if you go out further, it's like crazy.
Kenai, it was and this is in 2002, it was $10 for a number one.
Okay, I don't think it was like that in Anchorage, but it was definitely more, it's like LA. It's sure. Like usually when you go from LA on the road to the middle of the country, it's like a nice, everything's on sale.
Yeah.
And it's not like that when you go to Anchorage.
Yeah. Yeah, you go there and you're like, oh, everything is, why is it as expensive as New York City? Because they also, I found that fascinating. It was like one of the guys I worked with kind of told me, because I was stupid. He's like, well, you look at the shipping routes and it has to be boated in because of how the Rockies split up and come into Canada. It's such a nasty terrain that they can't take trucks.
Yeah, that
so
makes
they
sense.
Have to ship it. But Alaska is one of those places where I'm like, how have I not gone back to do shows?
Yeah.
Because I loved it. I loved being up there. I thought it was the most beautiful place on earth.
Yeah.
Especially in the summer.
Yeah.
Like, I think, is it hard for you to find nature beautiful when you, like, grew up in the best place for it?
You know, I used to be kind of a snob about it.
Absolutely.
I would, like roll my eyes at anything down here.
Yeah, and they're like, hey, we're going to go out to Western Mass. We're going to go up, you know, and you go, cool, I don't care.
But
boring forests.
I did kind of start to appreciate, like, especially like the Rocky Mountains. I guess you're from Denver.
Yeah.
And there is, I almost think, like, the thing about Alaska and in the north and Canada is it's like sparse.
Sure.
So every, you know, the plant trees are a little smaller. They're just, things just don't grow as much.
Yeah.
And there's something amazing about in the Rockies, you have kind of the same terrain, but like just lush meadows.
Yeah. It's very thick, especially.
Yeah.
Well, that's also something that's interesting, you know, growing up in places that people think they know about, but everyone thinks Denver is this, like, you know, you're on a mountain and you're like, it's flat.
Yeah.
You're in the Great Plains.
Yeah.
So everything's like very flat and then you hit the mountains.
Yeah.
But I did the same thing you did when I came, when I moved to New York, mm-hmm. and everyone was like, we're going to go skiing. And I was like, skiing? I was like, with what?
Yeah.
And they're like, Vermont. And you're like, those are ice hills. You need to go to the Rockies of Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. There is like a snooty thing when you grow up around beautiful nature.
Yeah.
Because I had, my whole family's from the Bay Area in Northern California, and they get very, like, Big Sur and, like, the sequoias. They're like, you don't know.
Yeah.
And we're like, all right, there's other good nature elsewhere.
Yeah.
I think that's something that's interesting for, like, people who are into nature but don't travel.
Yeah.
They get very smarmy and, like,
yeah,
you've never seen it. It's like, I don't think you've seen anything else. Because I'm sure I would go to, like, the Andes and be like, oh, these are crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I'm a mountain file.
Yeah.
And I didn't even like the mountains when I lived in Colorado.
Oh, wow.
Was that a thing? Like, my mom, I had a stepdad that was very, very active, but I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did you have family members that wanted you to go do more nature stuff? And were you like, can I just sit inside and watch TV?
No. When I said we're Jewish, so we're not as in nature. Sure. Like, we're still pretty into nature.
Okay.
I'm just saying compared to by Alaska standards.
Oh, my God.
We're not like insane. Yeah.
Alaska has standards that are unreachable. I knew a guy in Alaska that moved to a plot of land, built a shack, then built a second house.
Oh, wow.
And then built, and this is over the span of like 25 years, and then built a nice house, but he did it all himself. And you're that's what Alaska is. A guy that's like, well, I moved up to Ketchikan and I didn't have much.
Yeah, that's definitely not our family, but no, we were always very, and I was still am into like hiking and skiing.
And that's awesome. Stuff, And going to Harvard, did they think you came out of like the wilderness?
I mean, it was. It was cool, like, going to... I feel like I'm all... Like, when I was in Alaska, like, I felt exotic for being Jewish. And then when I left Alaska, I was, like, exotic for being from Alaska.
So yeah, that's like fun. Something that's what a fun way to feel, like... I mean, the anti-Semitism in Alaska has to be through the roof. I'm not going to act like... Listen, beautiful state or whatever.
Yeah.
It is isolated. That's where you find stuff where I don't think they're going to be knowing what the Torah is and exactly, you know, they're not like, you're not up in Alaska and they're like, Happy Yom Kippur. I got you some applesauce so you can have a sweet year and dip the challah bread in it.
No, definitely. I did not encounter a lot of like actual anti-Semitism, but I will say, you know, like in class when they're, you know, they're in sex ed and they're like, you know, circumcision is common among, you know, the Jewish tradition, everyone like turns to look at me. It's like that kind of thing.
I would turn back and go, what do you guys have? You guys all have breakfast burritos in your pants? Get the fuck out of here. Oh, I'm the only one that cleaned up. Oh, my people. Honestly, and this is, you know, and I've said this before on previous episodes, especially with my friends who are Jewish. I was a kid in the American suburbs that grew up on stand-up comedy and Mel Brooks and stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I wanted to be Jewish. Mm-hmm. So when I found out that circumcision was like a Jewish thing, I was like, well, all right. I was like, guys, turns out at the Hartford Hospital, they thought I was one of the chosen ones. But you really do wonder, like in Alaska, like the idea of you bringing up Hanukkah to them, and they're like, what do you mean?
Yeah, I remember the teacher, like in the second grade, had my dad come in and really? Tell the class about Hanukkah and stuff like
that. That's really funny. They go, I brought one in. And they go, excuse me? And they go, we got a real life Jewish man here who's going to explain how they burn oil. Just like a tanker. Just like one of those fish tankers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that a thing where you like move to Boston and then you move to California and you're around more Jewish people that you realize like, oh, damn, we were out there on our own?
Yeah, it always seems odd to me that like so many people, everywhere I've lived since Alaska, so many people are Jewish.
Yeah.
And it's like not... It's not like the first thing you think about with someone.
And I wonder, was that a big thing? Like, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have a younger brother. He's 7 years younger. Yeah.
So you guys, 7 years younger.
Yeah.
So he got to really, you got like, you were the older brother.
Yeah.
How does that affect you guys being close? Because you're out of high school, you're out of the house by the time he's 11.
Yeah, exactly. So he was always, you know, a little kid to me.
Okay.
And then, you know, until I went to college, then he goes to college. And then it was kind of this amazing experience, you know, once he was an adult, we're both like talking to him and like, wow, there's this like guy who thinks like me.
That's fun.
I thought I was the only one in the world that thinks like this.
That's really fun.
That's very cool.
I'm an only child, so I'm like I kind of like obsess about the idea of having a sibling in the house.
Yeah,
whether you're too close to him, you know, my fiance Katie grew up very close with her brother. And she kind of sees how I interact with my mom, who's a single mom, and I was an only child. And she'll come away from and be like, oh, I couldn't have handled that. And I was like, you don't really, because like, I think what's interesting about a sibling is you have someone to kind of confirm your reality in a way to go like, hey, is mom crazy?
Yeah.
And then you have someone to go, mom's a little crazy.
Yeah.
But when you're an only child, it's like you're living under a dictator.
Yeah.
It's like she was like Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
So the whole time I was like, she made the stars and the moon? I'm like, I don't know. And then you get older and you meet other people and they kind of confirm. Did you have that relationship with your brother even though there was 7 years in like apart?
Not really that. I mean, I think being, having the 7 year, difference and being the oldest is kind of psychologically, you have the only child mentality.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah. Cause you were like, I mean, you were seven when your brother's born, and you're kind of like, hey, I got used to how stuff was around here.
Yeah.
And now there's a baby.
Well, seven is almost old enough that you're like excited about it. And
oh, yeah?
Not, I don't remember being jealous. I remember like having a new pet.
Sure. Of. Oh, yeah. Where you go, something to play with.
Yeah,
exactly. I got a little brother. I got a little man that like I can mold. I mean, I think it's awesome that you, did your family know you were going to be a comedian? You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely not. I think anyone that knew me as a kid growing up surprised. I mean, anyone knows me now that doesn't know me that well surprised because I'm shy.
Yeah, but hilarious.
Well, thank you.
I mean, again, go listen to his album on Spotify. The special should be out now. Well-rounded entertainer, animated. Does the animated thing help you with like, you know, you said you're shy.
Yeah.
Obviously a big part of a special is performance.
Yeah.
Does that kind of take stuff off your plate where you go, oh, I just get to do my jokes?
Oh, I mean, it definitely took pressure off.
Sure.
I mean, that's not really the reason enough to choose to do it. I had other reasons, but I was glad, you know, once I realized,
that's a benefit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then the animation process, are you like there with them every step of the way, watching it, how it like looks?
Yeah. I mean, I was, I hired Beno Box to do
which
it.
Which does Bob's Burgers. They do. I mean, they are Bob's Burger. They're the ones that have made it the whole thing. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
Bento Box is fucking unbelievable. The one time I had a show at Fox, we were working with them and they understand animation in a way that you're like, oh, you guys are the premier place to do it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I'm glad you did it. That's so cool you did it. Was that a relationship through Bob's Burgers?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you're talking to him and you're like, hey, I kind of want to do a stand-up special?
Yeah. I mean, initially, so first I did a 3-minute animatic. So I wasn't sure it would be good. It would look good.
Yeah.
And that was actually, technically that was through Lawrence Bouchard's company, the creator of Bob's, his production company, but is using, you know, hiring animators that I knew from the same company. And then I just loved how it looked. So I'm like, okay, it's worth paying for the whole thing.
That's awesome. Cause it is a very heavy investment.
Yeah.
To do a special in animation.
Yeah.
It's like, is it a 60-minute special?
It's like 46.
Yeah, and when people go, he didn't do 60, it's like, motherfucker, he animated it. Do you know how much it costs? It would have cost the same cost as Fern Gully to do a full hour. With the Bob's Burgers, you know, you get the role of Tina. Did you know Tina Belcher was going to be as iconic?
You know, I was excited almost for the wrong reason because I thought it was like a really funny gimmick.
I'm playing this middle school girl who is the best character on the show.
Yeah. Well, you're very kind. But
I mean, come on. The fan fiction about Bobby Jr. touching butts. How do you not like Tina Belcher? Tina Belcher to me is the most relatable out of all the characters in Bob's Burgers.
That's a surprise because I've come around to that view. It did not seem that all. It would be that at first.
Did you think like, oh, I'm just going to play this weird girl.
Exactly.
It's going to have my voice.
Exactly.
She's super into horse. I'm going to play a horse girl.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought it was like Steve Urkel character that was like for laughs, like a weird person for laughs, which was great. And I was happy to do that. And then it came out and I was like, nobody's really commenting on this, nobody's like, this is an amazing gimmick. You know, no one really cared about that.
Yeah, you thought it was going to be a bit where everyone goes, well, who's up with the nerdy daughter?
Yeah, one cared. No one cared about that. And then over time, this is just 100% due to the writers being great writers. It was like, I realized this was like a multi-dimensional, super relatable character.
Sure. I mean, the heart of the show.
Yeah.
It really is like you watch an episode of Bob's Burgers and you feel for Tina. You're like, man, Tina, whatever they're going through.
Yeah.
Because I think Tina, out of the characters, carries the most anxiety.
Yeah.
Out of everybody, absolutely. Especially out of the kids.
Yeah.
The other kids are just wild childs.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, Eugene Merman and Sarah Silverman as those, it's just like,
Christian Shaw. Yeah,
sorry, my bad. Christian Shaw. Another Colorado.
Sarah Silverman is on it.
Sarah Silverman's in it. All. I mean, the voice, your guys' roster is unbelievable. Everybody on that show, it's like you look at it and you're like, it's a who's who.
Yeah.
But Christian Shaw, you and Eugene are just like unbelievable as the kids.
Yeah.
But you look at Tina and you go, well, she's the one that's always worried.
Yeah. She's like the POV for the audience.
I really think you really do get, especially the way that the age she's at, where she's at in school, like the characters that they have around her, because she's at that age where kids are starting to become cool, be interested in the opposite sex.
Yeah.
And so it's great. It's do you have like people, have you called people as Tina before, like friends or like left messages? Because I feel like if I was an iconic character, that would be a fun thing.
I mean, people definitely ask to do that.
Yeah, like voice memos and stuff.
Yeah.
Is it annoying? Or were you like, I don't want to
do that? No, it's the only thing that is stressful is when they don't tell me what to say and they're just say whatever, like just to write it, write it down.
Give me a direction to go. Because it is a thing. Has anyone on the phone with you been like, you sound like Tina Belcher?
Every once in a while. It's pretty rare for people to like realize.
Customer service?
Like, it's happened one time. And really? It's always just like, I don't even remember exactly what it was, but it's always just like, well.
Sometimes with these ad reads, it really, you can just be like, oh, I'm getting older. I'm getting older. But half of that is awesome. And then half of that is like, well, there's a lot of adult stuff that I need to know how to do. Life insurance being one of them. Well, check out Ethos. Ethos can help you get life insurance, and they can help you get it fast and easy. 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, same day coverage, no medical exam, just answer a few simple health questions, and you can get up to $3 million in coverage. Some policies are as low as $30 a month, and you'll get your lowest rate from their network of trusted carriers. Ethos has 4.8 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot. So if you're a Trustpilot girly, you know those are some sick ratings. Take 10 minutes. Get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/Soder. That's ethos.com/Soder. Application times may vary. Rates may vary. Trustpilot rating as of 6/1/2025.
And really? It's always just like, I don't even remember exactly what it was, but it's always just like, well, now like I can't be that aggressive with trying to get my customer service thing I want.
you're like, my cable's out and I'll kick the shit out of you. And they go, is this Tina Belcher? And you're like, I'll rub your butt. Just please. I'll write fan fiction about you. I've always wondered that because it's a voice that isn't, you're not like, you're obviously ramping it or you're making it like more of a voice, but it's your voice.
Yeah.
It's not like a thing where you're putting it on.
Yeah.
It's just the way you talk.
Yeah.
So it's gotta be moments where people in public are like,
yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it definitely, I mean, I like it. Like I'm shy. So, and I don't get recognized that much. So any attention like makes my day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is, it is interesting that it is. I mean, they shift the pitch up like a quarter tone, but it's basically my voice.
But that's what you can tell. They just basically go like, we're going to make you a young girl, but we're going to take your voice. Yeah. So there has to be moments where people are talking and they're like, man, this is I'm going to sound crazy.
Yeah.
You sound exactly like Tina Belcher. And then you're like, I am Tina Belcher. Yeah. Hello, Dan Mintz, Tina Belcher. That's like a fun introduction where they're like, oh, you're fucking me up. I don't know, man. I always think it's funny when people are like that. There's like a humanity in it of hearing someone's voice and being like, I know who you are. Mm-hmm, like I've had that, you know, H. John Benjamin, I forgot where I was. I was in public and he was by me talking. And I was like, who's doing a perfect archer? And I looked over and I was like, oh my God, that's actually H. John Benjamin. He was just like, it was like at this party in Brooklyn. And he was like, well, you know, he's got such an iconic voice that you're like, amazing. You hear that and you're like, oh, it's Bob's Burgers. Or if you're an archer fan, you're like, oh, that's Archer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always, I think, the thing about cartoons that I've loved is that sometimes it's just these people's voices, but they're their characters. Mm-hmm. So then they see the person, and you're like, well, I'm not that character.
Yeah.
It's almost like wrestling, where you're like, hey, I'm not that wrestler. I'm actually like a man that walks around that has his own life.
I mean, the gender swap does make it easier for people to separate me, I think.
But yeah, because there's two. Because also...
John Roberts.
John Roberts, who does the mom. Mm-hmm. But that's like a voice he puts on.
Yeah. I mean, we had different ways of getting to doing the same thing.
Like, sure.
He was doing that voice. That's like his mom.
Yeah.
Doing the voice of his mom. And he was doing that on YouTube. And Lauren loved it and hired him for that as the mom. Whereas I was actually just supposed to play a boy and I changed it to a girl and kept the voice.
How did you find that out? Did they tell you?
It was actually very stressful because I got a message from Lauren saying, hey, call me back. And I was like, you know, been a while since we taped the pilot presentation.
Sure.
I was like, this is weird. I'd always would just hear from, you know, Lauren's producer or my agent. Why am I here?
Never the creator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I bet what this is the show got picked up, but they're not keeping me on the
sure.
show.
Very normal thing to think.
Yeah.
When you get any kind of phone call from yeah. a boss is from the boss.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I'm out.
Yeah. And I just, I took me a while to call back cause I just didn't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Delay
the
inevitable.
Get that call. And then when I called, I mean, and of course the first thing he says, I'm calling about casting. It's like, here it is.
Oh, fuck.
And they're like, if you want to change your voice to a girl, well, you know, okay, that I'm definitely getting recast. And I have before been not exactly recast a girl, but I went out for a part and they ended up changing the character to woman. So I was like,
oh, so this is the thing you've bumped up against before.
Up against before.
You go, motherfucker, what are you guys trying? I'm a man. You start screaming, I'm a man into the phone.
I did. That's what I did. That's
like
what I
Elephant
said.
Man.
That's exactly
I'm
what I said.
I'm a man.
But then he quickly said, but it will still be you. And then I was like, okay, I just don't do any other voices. And he said, that's fine. It'll be your voice. And I was very relieved. I was also very skeptical, but I was like, well, it's your show. Do whatever you want. I didn't think that would work.
There is a level of trust that you have to go like, all right, whatever.
Yeah.
Your shit. I'll
exactly.
go along with it.
Exactly. And then they sent me an animation test. I think it was just Tina doing my stand-up just to see it as like.
Oh, that's
and
fun. I was like, that's got to be really fun to watch.
Cool. I wonder
character.
If that, yeah, the video's anywhere.
If you have that, you should put it out on your YouTube channel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To go along with it, because that's really fun.
Yeah.
Just to see your jokes done
yeah.
by Tina.
Yeah, I got to get that. I got to get that.
Yeah.
And then it's like, this actually works. And you know, and that was that. What I found out later, I actually was not too far off of the truth because I didn't find out this out until years later. But like, so originally it was just two kids.
Sure.
And John Benjamin, you know, got me this job and changed my life because I had just met him. We were writing on Dimitri Martin's show, Important Things.
Oh,
Dimitri
yeah.
Martin.
Yeah.
And
man, you've written on fucking bangers.
I've written on a lot of stuff. Veep, yeah, that was the most.
One of the best. I mean, yeah, Pimp just popped. That's
yeah.
It's up there with 30 Rock. One B is the I think the best show, best comedies of all time.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And that's just a personal opinion. Yeah. I know people get fucking really weird about that, but to me it goes 30 yeah. Rock, Veep, and I can do this with it.
I mean, it's amazing that because Veep was starting to overlap like the whatever you want to call it, like woke era, and the things that we were still allowed to say and write that like you wouldn't have been able to on a new show.
Yeah,
that year.
Where
yeah.
I think they were really letting you take, but I think the brilliance of it was with Veep. Was that there was this like, sometimes shows really love to be like, we're fearless. And you're like, shut up. Veep was just like, oh no, this is the world. This yeah. is what Selena Meyer
yeah.
lives through.
Yeah.
And all this crazy shit.
Yeah.
You know, with her daughter and the Secret Service and then them getting pregnant and like stuff yeah. in the later seasons that yeah. you go like, I could see if this was a new show, them not letting you do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was, 100%. I like when a show, and I think Always Sunny is one of the only shows left. Mm-hmm. That has that carte blanche of like,
yeah. Well, hey, South Park.
South Park. But yeah. South, no one's ever, South Park's in its own, it's on its own planet.
Yeah, yeah.
No one will tell Trey and Matt Stone what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
Trey and Matt are always going to do with it. And
yeah.
they're the last of that.
Yeah.
They're the
yeah.
last of the Mel Brookses who just go like, you know, Mel Brooks has that story where he was like, every time I got notes from a network, I'd go, great. And then I just wouldn't do them.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what, you could tell Trey Parker and Matt Stone are the last of that. Yeah. Of like, cool. But Veep felt a little like that.
Yeah.
I also think you guys were on such a fucking run.
Yeah.
The show just kept getting progressively better and better.
I mean, I think so. I was only there for the end. And,
okay.
And
was that,
I think that
was that nerve-wracking joining a show like that after the train had been on the tracks?
Well, Veep was so, you know, it was all British writers.
Sure. I mean, the creator is British.
Yeah.
Probably why they skewer American politics so well.
Yeah.
Is because it's an outsider's perspective.
Yes.
They see the bullshit.
They're not like invested.
Yeah. Americans have this like Manchurian thing with patriotism.
Yeah.
Where at a certain thing you go like, I do love America.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But a British person can be like, oh, this is broken. You're all
exactly. yeah.
idiots.
Yeah. Like, yeah. yeah. So I think that helped a lot. And then I like all the British writers left the show. I don't know. I have no idea what the history of the like, I mean, they were leaving on top. So it was their choice, obviously.
Sure.
But HBO wanted to keep doing it. And they brought in Dave Mandel, who's an amazing genius too. And he kind of, and I, again, his first year, I still wasn't there. I came the next year. But he, it's such a hard thing to take a pre-existing thing and bring in.
It's a new chef.
Right? Yeah.
You have like the same menu.
Yeah.
And the chef has to cook it the exact same, if not better.
Yeah. And in, I mean, the biggest change I think he made was it was more joke dance.
Sure.
And I
that's interesting. I'm going to do a rewatch.
Yeah.
Because I would love to see if you can actually see the like per, I think it's Michelle Wolf has watched it five times.
Uh-huh.
Because we have like rewatches and that's her favorite show.
Yeah.
And
oh, cool.
We'll be like, oh yeah, you got to rewatch it. But I'm due for a rewatch of Veep.
I think that's a change. And I also, for me, I started watching Dave Mandel's season because for, I hadn't really been watching it. And it was like, I had a meeting to write the show. So I watched that first. And then I went back and watched the rest. So for me, like his season, even though it wasn't the first, is like the first, it's the first I watched. And the rest is like, oh, interesting. There's not, it's like so funny, but there's just fewer like jokes for a minute. And then, but then of course, when you look at comments, most people watched it first and then people always complain about a change.
Yeah. Always.
But I think he did an amazing job, like sticking the landing, or it's not a landing,
keeping it moving.
Yeah.
Keeping it moving is so difficult, especially because when you lose someone as important as that and all the writers leave and you're bringing in someone, like I said, like a new chef, you go, well, is the kitchen trained? Can they do that?
Yeah.
And it really doesn't, it's hard to tell. You watch and you go, I didn't even really know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was that big of a shakeup. I just thought they obviously added new writers or lost writers.
That's just my observation about how the,
but I definitely would like rewatching that because you know, the older I get, the more I go back and I watch shows for different reasons. Mm-hmm, I think I used to just watch shows because I enjoyed them. But now from a creative aspect, I do love watching 30 Rock and being like, I wonder how long it took them to get to that punchline.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's all these stories about Tina Fey keeping the writer's room and being like, we can beat that joke. We can beat that joke. And it's so weird in an age of instant everything and everything's AI, so everything can be made instantly. It's like you really do see the quality of a show when you're like, I can tell they were in there all night trying to beat a couple jokes because the jokes are so good that you're like, they had to have been that one where they're like, all right, we got it. We can move on.
I mean, that's the issue with you know, the studios being like, well, you know, White Lotus was just Mike White wrote, one person wrote that.
Yeah.
It's like, there are definitely shows where you only need one person and they're great shows. But there's also the type of shows like 30 Rock or you know, any 90s, you know, Friends, Simpsons,
where you
need a lot of writers to do that kind of comedy, and you're just not going to get that kind of show if you're not willing to pay for a lot of writers.
Pay for a room of 12 guys who are, or, you know, girls, ladies and men who are throwing jokes. Because, you know, I remember when I started stand up in Tucson, Arizona, and they did like a benefit for the club and all these old people that used to work there. And one of them was a writer for Seinfeld.
Oh, wow.
And I was just drinking beers with him. I was like an open micer. And I was like, I thought Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld wrote Seinfeld. He's like, no. He's like, are you kidding me? There's like a chorus line of all of us writing. And he told me the two episodes he wrote. And I was like, and then I went back and I watched and I was like, oh, he did.
Yeah.
Like, oh, his name's on there as a writer.
Yeah.
So I do think it's interesting because a lot of times you're right, the Mike Whites, and they go, oh, White Lotus is just one guy, or True Detective, that first season.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, he wrote all that. And you're like, well, that seems, even Vince Gilligan on Breaking Bad, people don't realize he had a whole crew.
Yeah.
Like, obviously he's the creator of that show, but we need better writers' rooms.
Yeah.
But studios just don't want to invest.
Yeah.
We're in this age now where they go, well, you just make it and we'll...
Yeah.
Like that used to be a big thing for guys kind of like you that were like, hey, I'm a little shy. I don't want to go out and do all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I can write jokes.
Mm-hmm.
I know a bunch of guys like that. And you're like, well, put them in a room. Then you can make a fucking fantastic show. I this week I've been really interested with all the commencement speeches have been, I was telling him before you got here, all the commencement speeches in college have been like the Google CEO or like these tech people. And what's really funny to me is they're giving these commencement speeches and they're talking about AI and they're getting booed.
Yeah, I heard about that.
It's been great.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it to anybody. Go Google it. Go look it up. It's very funny because you're watching these like CEO, very wealthy men who are just used to everyone saying yes to them. And all these college kids are like, fuck you, you're taking our fucking jobs. And they're going, but it's a great tool. And you're like watching them. I think the most interesting part of me is watching the crack and seeing the humanity come out of them, of being like, guys, stop being mad at me.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're seeing that where you're like,
I gotta watch this.
Oh, dude, do you think AI is gonna fuck up writers' rooms?
It's impossible. It's impossible to predict how technology will in the future.
That hasn't happened. Why there's no cell phones in any of future movies from the 80s.
Yeah,
no one guessed cell phones.
I mean, I'm very, very stressed about it.
Yeah, really is this very stressful thing because it's like AI isn't creative.
Yeah, but
it just mimics what it already knows.
But the brain is a computer, so technically,
they can get it to where it is.
I don't think. I mean, every time I check in, what can it do? How close is it to replacing me? It's like not there yet, but you just never know what the next model is going to do.
But the idea of you going in and checking in and being like, are you replacing me yet?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, like, I'll be back in 6 months.
Well, just say like, can you write 10 jokes in the style of Dan Mintz and see what it does. But when I first tried that, like, first of all, I was like, before I do this, what if it's a great joke? Would I do that in my act? And I was thinking like, well, if it can consistently do that, then I'm just retiring, because what's the point?
Yeah.
If it could occasionally do a couple, I guess if a friend gave me a couple. But then what I realized is like, so it's like, oh, this is a terrible joke. Oh, wow, this is a great joke. Oh, I'm so fucked. And then I Google it and it's like, oh, it's just someone's tweet.
Yeah.
And I felt better, but I also am like, okay, well, you can never use something it wrote because you won't know
exactly
if it stole from someone. And you don't want that to be your excuse. Like, I'm so sorry I stole your joke. I was using AI.
But that is, you know, what's interesting about that is that's an inherent feeling in comedy before AI. You know, that's like, you hear the stories about Dave Attell. That's the reason he calls other comics.
Yeah.
Because he goes, does anybody do this joke?
Yeah.
And AI doesn't do that. AI just goes, here's that joke.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, you took another joke and just gave it to me.
Yeah.
And I think that is a thing of like, I think the reason it scares me so much is because the people that run these studios and the people that are in charge of making this stuff aren't creatives anymore.
Yeah.
They're all hatchet men. They're all like numbers guys. Like, studios want to bring in guys who go, hey, you can spend this much and you'll make this much.
Yeah.
And all the board members will be very happy.
Yeah.
But what they don't realize is they're killing the small amount of creativity that they actually have in the room by shrinking the budget.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't have to pay 8 writers to write the show anymore. Yeah. You go, but that's what made the show good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously the actors and the people that made it, but it's like the people, the guy who grew up in New Hampshire that knew this joke about this place in New Hampshire that you reference in the show, that is a great joke. It's like, you're not going to get him.
Yeah.
You're going to cut him out for a computer that's just going to mimic someone else's.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, you, in theory, like, if they're really good analysts and number crunchers, then they'll be able to, they should be able to figure out, this is the part you cut the budget and this is where you don't cut the budget.
Exactly.
But I think they're just, from there, if you're not actually in a writer's room and kind of seeing it up, seeing the process up close, I think there's too much noise in the data for them to realize that's why this show's better than this show.
Yeah. I mean, you know what it is it's like, we're in such an age where there's so much like technology's made so much stuff convenient, you know, like finding a movie or ordering food or buying an album. You know, it's like all this convenient stuff that we misinterpret it, that it can also do the heavy shit.
Yeah.
Where you go, I don't know if it can do the heavy shit yet. Because even the entertainment stuff, it fucks up so much. And I think people don't, you know, people want GLP-1 stuff. They don't want to go to they don't want to watch their diet and exercise and do the old school route of like, I'm counting my calories, I'm exercising 5 days a week.
Yeah.
They want to go, I'm going to take the shot.
Yeah.
And now I get sick when I think about food. I just won't eat food. And I'll have and it's like, there are people that need that. There are, you know, I'm friends with people that struggle with their weight. And you do know that there are some people that could help, but it feels like people are using a nuclear bomb to swat a fly.
Yeah.
Where they're going like, oh, this is the, oh, I can do it. And I'm skinny now and I have like this benefit. But it's like, I feel like that's happening a lot in comedy right now, where people are going like, well, GOP won it. We'll just fucking cut it. We don't. Yeah. It's just a shot. We'll AI it. You know, we were talking about someone special, and we won't say whose, but this guy was like, they fucked up the filming. Mm-hmm. The guy goes, I'll just clean it up with AI. You go, don't do that. Because then next thing you know, you go like, well, I don't want to film a show. Yeah. I'll just put my jokes in, and AI will make my performance smoother. And it's like, I don't know. There is a thing, especially a guy like you that writes one-liners. It's like, you know, if you shifted looking at from comedy to music, it's like you write sheet music. That's so difficult that people don't realize. It's like, AI might be able to do it, but it won't be. They don't have the years of learning it like you did.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is like an area where I go, for convenience, I'm all for technology.
Yeah.
The heavier shit, I think we really need to chill. And I'm glad these CEOs are getting booed. I think all CEOs should get booed. But I like that these guys are like, to their face, an overwhelming group makes me very happy. I don't know. We're in the era of liking bosses.
I think we were in that era, and that maybe people aren't realizing that we're not.
I think that's actually the way to say it is like, there was an era where like, look at this guy. What a boss.
Yeah.
What a CEO. And now you go
like the Social Network.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you go, I actually think you're kind of fucked up. Oh, you're kind of a dick. Are you poisoning the water? And they're like, whatever, bro. I'm a boss. If I was a CEO, I would just lean into it.
Yeah.
And be like, why, you guys mad I'm bawling out so hard with my army of robots? Was there ever a time when you were in Alaska that you were like, I'm just going to stay here? Did you ever, or were you one of those people that's like, please let me out right now?
I mean, I never thought none of the things I wanted to do or that was really the best place to do it. So I always thought I'd be leaving.
Did you want to be an entertainer? Did you want to be in like,
I mean, there's one thing I wanted to do.
Sure.
And I think teenagers anywhere outside of like, I guess if you live here or LA, wish they lived somewhere else. So, but you know, now I'm going back, like I love it. And I think it'd be cool to move back here, especially now that you can kind of live anywhere.
Sure. The remote possibilities.
My wife doesn't think she could handle the darkness. So I don't think.
What's the harder one? Is the winters or the summers?
Definitely the winters. I mean, people get like seasonal affective disorder and
like for real,
it'll be like
not a hot girl that like is sad in January. Like, I have seen it. You're like talking about people that actually get mentally affected.
Yeah.
Did you ever have that? Were you ever affected, or is it because you grew up? It's kind of like me with the altitude. It never really affected me.
Not that I know of. I think it's growing up there, yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
It's because, like, you know, I take people to Colorado and they get headaches and they like have to sit down and stuff, and you're like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But I haven't lived there in 26 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, growing up there. So when you took your wife to Alaska, did you take her up there for a winter?
Just
like in the winter.
I think we went in like April once where there's still snow on the ground. I think she just knows that she couldn't handle it.
She just knows that.
Yeah.
Where is she from?
She family moved around a little bit, but she's mainly from Iowa, Davenport, Iowa.
Right. So it's like not similar in any way that she could be like, I can handle that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is like the retirement. Cause I love Colorado and I've had the same thoughts about like, man, maybe I would come back here, you know, when everything slowed down and I just wanted to kind of be by myself and read books and shit or be with Katie and the dogs. And I feel like, I don't know. I was one of the only people that I knew that really wanted to get out of there in high school.
Oh, really?
A lot of my friends still live there and have great lives and I love visiting them and stuff. But I feel like I was like maybe one of five people that I knew that was like, oh, I'm ready to get the fuck out of here. Because Colorado is beautiful.
Yeah.
There's just no humidity. The weather is great.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little tricky. So it is a place that absolutely, I don't fault anybody for being like, oh, I just want to stay here the rest of my life. But I really had that like itchiness.
Yeah. I think more people want to leave Anchorage because it's, I mean, Denver's a bigger, like, big city and it's like closer to stuff. It does feel like there's a lot. I haven't actually researched this, so who knows? But it feels like there's a lot of turnover.
It's a podcast. You just get to throw out information that's not vetted at all.
I feel like there's a lot of turnover where like a lot of the adults in Anchorage move there as adults and the kids growing up there move away.
Well, they I don't know if this is when I lived up there for the summer, but they pay you to move there.
Well, you got the, you mean the dividend?
Yeah, the dividend. Dividend.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
don't. If you move to Alaska and become a citizen there, you get like in 02, it was a $1,600 check. I don't know what it is now.
Yeah,
but it was like money from the oil reserve that's up there or something.
Yeah, they basically when they first found oil and started, you know, and the state realized it had all this money, they set aside a bunch of money for basically for to use in an emergency. And then the investment income off of that goes is just distributed as a check to everyone. So it's different every year based on the market. And then and now it's like a third rail. Like you can have an emergency and no one's going to let you touch that money.
Really?
They would need to. They want to get their checks. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, dude, come on. We're having a good year. Yeah. We're having a bullish market. I need this money. Exactly, it is. Yeah. But that was kind of the, you know, the like sell at the cannery.
Yeah.
They were like, because I was dead broke. And they're like, you know, if you move here, you get like $1,600 and you're like, well, I could use $1,600.
Yeah. I mean, it always, my check always just went to my college fund. So
great.
I saw it, but yeah.
That is great. When you were at Harvard and people find out you're from Alaska, Harvard is one of those universities where you probably saw like legit WASPs, like snooty, like, I want to say like, you know, the bad guys from Trading Places, like the ones that sing to women where they're like, and of course there's dollar. I always think of Harvard and Yale like that. Cause I had a friend that went to Yale and he would come back home and I'd be like, what is it like? You skull and crossbones? But when you move from Alaska to Cambridge and you're at Harvard, was there like this, like, where are you from? You're from Alaska?
It's a big enough campus with a, enough like economic diversity that like there's more, there definitely are the stereotypes, people from the movies, but they're not, that's not most of the people that you see.
I'd be fascinated with them.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what's your life like?
Yeah. And you know, there's definitely like the richest people in the world, the richest families. But yeah, I mean, my dad actually went to Harvard.
Oh, cool.
And that helped, you know, made it easier for me to get in.
Oh, well, then you have someone that, you have a Sherpa, you have someone that knows the lay of the land.
Yeah. And we actually went to like his 25th reunion.
Oh, cool.
Which the whole family, when I was like 13. So I met like kids at private schools and I started to kind of learn a little bit about that East Coast culture, but
seeing what they're like, where you're like, you live at school and they're like, I do.
I know. I begged my parents to send me to boarding school. They're like, you can pick between boarding school or college, but we can't.
Oh, you wanted to go to boarding school?
I mean, just when I met kids from there. I didn't really know what it was like. It sounds like you're like independent.
Sure. You're live at school.
You're independent early, but probably you're not that independent based on the rules, but yeah.
Well, it's so funny because like you wanted to go to boarding school and my threat was military school. My mom was like, I'll send you to Kansas. You'll go to fucking military school if you don't shape it. And you're like, all right, I'm not smoking cigarettes anymore. I'm a good kid now. But it is like, I did not want to go away for school. I was like, dude, I will run away before you'll fucking put me in military school. I always think it's interesting because like, when you would come back to Alaska from school, from Harvard, were your friends that were from Anchorage, like, what's it like? Because I was blown away by my friend who went to Yale. He came home and I would just be like, who have you met? Like, what's the craziest person? He knew, like, the CEO of Snapple's daughter. Mm-hmm. He met a kid, and this was all, like, freshman year shit. And I remember we were hanging out, and he met a kid that was a genius, like a certified. That's what's crazy about Harvard and Yale. It's like, you can call people geniuses, but motherfucking geniuses go to these schools. And he met a kid that developed, which is really prominent now, the technology of charging by laying something on it.
Oh, wow.
So like this was 2001.
Yeah.
And the kid had developed it and patented it. And he, I mean, obviously, I don't know if that's who's, thing it was, but my buddy came home and it was like, in the future you'll be able just to like lay your flip phone on a thing and it'll charge. Obviously we didn't know about smartphones, but he was right. And I was like, damn, that's crazy you knew about that 25 years ago. Did you have moments like that where you were like meeting kids and then telling people back home? Like,
I mean, I feel like I mean, most kids at like an Ivy League school are basically regular people that are just really good at taking tests.
Yeah. And, okay. That makes me feel better.
Yeah.
That does make me feel like a lot less dumber because you're like, I'm horrible at tests. I would have never.
Yeah, exactly. It just, you know, people, the average person underperforms on tests because they're nervous or they're awkward constraints. And then people that are just good at it, like, they get into the best schools. And then, but yeah, but you do have like that, like, you know, 3% of the student population is like insane geniuses that you never meet anywhere else.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I don't remember meeting anyone where I was like, someone exciting to talk about. I feel like there's so many in, other people somehow knew like celebrities that I just didn't.
Oh, really?
But yeah, it was, it is like interesting now, like all the, you know, people that I, you know, remember from classes, like they're like, you know, writing for the New York Times or whatever, and just seeing their names out there. Yeah.
Yeah. That has got to be fun that you're like, I remember him from sophomore year. And
yeah.
Now this guy's writing an op-ed piece. Well, you have two kids. When they go back to Alaska with you, how, because your parents are still up there, right?
Yeah.
Do they love that?
I mean, my son like loves hiking, and he loves like going to his very rustic summer camp. So he's very excited to do all the stuff.
So he's got to be like, can we go to grandma and grandpa's?
This is
the best.
Yeah.
Versus Iowa?
Yeah.
Woof. What a fucking. Well, I know which family I'm picking to go. No offense to the great state of Iowa, and shout out George Kittle from the 49ers. But fucking Alaska or Iowa, I don't even think that's a conversation. For a vacation, you go, please, can we go to Alaska?
Yeah.
I mean, your son's super into it?
Yeah. And then my daughter's fine with that. She'll go on hikes and stuff.
She's fine. Do your kids care at all that you're Tina Belcher?
No, I think they think that it's cool.
Yeah.
Living in LA, it just doesn't mean that
that's
much.
Gotta be.
You know, it's like you're never going to be the most successful person at your kid's elementary school.
Oh,
like there's like A-list movie stars.
Yeah, so like, your daughter's gonna come home and go like, I'm friends with Moana.
Yeah,
you know what do you mean? Like actual Moana. We're in a squash group together, and you're like, holy shit. LA is really the only place that you can go. Like, I even think in New York, your kids would get more mileage out of you being
maybe.
Tina Belcher.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And you know, they'd be like, hey, you know, his dad's Tina Belcher? Did you know that? Like, LA, it really is like, oh, that's fun. Mm-hmm. What other projects is your dad on? Kids are asking that?
No, I remember like from just when all I did was stand up in New York and just basically at the open mic level.
Sure.
Like the regular people were so impressed. And like to move to LA, like the level you have to get to have people be as impressed anywhere else, simply that you like go do open mic stand up.
The thing about LA that always blew my mind was when I started going there regularly, and you realize like everybody there is in the business somehow.
Yeah.
Like everybody, like you'll be at like a gas station and the guy will be like, I got a spec script picked up by NBC. And you're like, holy shit, everyone here works. It's part of the reason I didn't want to move there was because I liked being around regular people.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked being, and I needed to be in a city where I could do stand up a lot.
Yeah.
And this was a city where I felt like no one cares.
Yeah, yeah.
They
go
like, you go like, I did well at the Comedy Cellar. And he's like, I got off an 18-hour shift and we're on the same W train. Shut the fuck up. I liked that about it. Whereas LA, I just felt like everyone was like, oh, you haven't done enough. And you're like, I don't know. But the older I get, the more I enjoy LA.
Yeah.
The more I go out there and I go, oh, this is nice. It's just nice weather.
Yeah.
You probably have a backyard.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is definitely nice. With, like you mentioned, your dog.
And, oh, yeah. She's going nuts right now. Like, she just wants to come out and say hi to you.
And like they still need like walks and stuff. But like if it's the middle of the night and they have to go to the bathroom, you don't have to take them on a walk. Yeah.
Every night, she's in this new thing right now. I usually fall asleep on this couch while I'm watching TV. And then at night, she waits for me to go to bed. She'll drink an entire bowl of water and then go stand at the door and be like, hey, and you go, we got to take an elevator.
Yeah,
we got to like get in an elevator and go downstairs. And it's like 2 a.m. and you're like, and then she just wants to smell stuff. And there's a guy screaming at you, you know, and you're like, hey, all right, I'm in my slides. Please don't attack me.
Yeah.
But it is that's what does suck.
Yeah.
But like little stuff of like Katie and I like jokingly fantasize about the idea of just opening a door and being like, go outside.
Yeah, it is nice. Yeah.
That's like, to me, that's like, you could fly. Like, you could do that. I'm very excited to watch the special, man. I think you're fucking hilarious. I love a ton of the stuff that you've worked on and done. Check out the special. The link is below right now. Well-rounded entertainer, Dan Mintz. Watch it. He's hilarious. I appreciate you coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude. I really, thanks for coming by, dude.